Listening to World Watchers International over FM 102, KLRB, Carmel by the Sea. And now here's Mae Brussel with part two.
Okay, I'm going to run down for you really quickly some of the big stories of the past week that have taken place that I think are important to watch, and then we'll pick up again, hopefully, pieces later. The Wells Fargo case is going to go to trial. Mr. L. Ben Lewis of Los Angeles, of Beverly Hills, is going to testify against Harold Smith. Harold Smith was a small potato. Huge amounts of money were sent through his bank accounts. He blew the whistle on many of the stories. It took several murders, at least that we know of, and a fire to burn the records for this to go ahead. But Mr. Lewis has been hiding, and if the plot were to fall, they'll use a guy who had used other names or aliases before on minor charges, or they have a leash. This is what you call doing a job with a leash on somebody. You take somebody who has a past criminal offense and you promise them they'll get off that charge if they do a job or if they can use your account to siphon money through for other operations. And if you blow the whistle, they destroy their records of their past actions or kill witnesses if necessary, and then they pull out your earlier charges, and if you're not bumped off, you're put back into prison. So Harold Smith took a certain amount of money and lived as a fat cat with boat and home and he lived off the hog for a little while, thinking he was pretty cutesy with the Wells Fargo Bank. And then when it came down to where the money was siphoning or coming from or going out from, they pinned it to his account, and now he's the fall guy. And Ben Lewis, who's been hiding ever since this story broke, is going to testify and work with the FBI. The Navy is buying huge cargo ships. They've bought 8 cargo ships to carry military supplies, the world's fastest merchant ship. There's every indication that they're getting ready for war. The president, the would-be president, is running for office in Costa Rica, if they can still have elections, criticized the plans of Ronald Reagan in Central America this week. He said that he gives military assistance in Central America, and he's literally forcing people to become communists, that military assistance is not the only alternative, and we know this. And he said stability is the only thing that should be supported, true social and economic reform, and they shouldn't keep putting money into dictatorships the way we are doing. Jack Anderson wrote another article, a disgusting article this week, Two Rivals Are Gone. Now, this is the kind of boomerang, double whammy that this man pulls. He refers to the two airplane crashes in Panama, one of Torrijos of Panama and one of the president of Ecuador, and suggests that Fidel Castro was behind these mysterious crashes. He said within less than 3 months, mysterious plane crashes have eliminated two of Castro's potentially most dangerous rivals. Now, every country in Latin and Central America is a military dictatorship, except possibly these two. So Castro isn't rivaling with them. He would like to have allies. Here was the elected president of Ecuador, and the president of Panama had recently helped the Sandinistas to get rid of Somoza. Why would Castro oppose a man who gets rid of Somoza, who's constantly a thorn in the side of Fidel Castro in Cuba? Jack Anderson refers to these as mysterious plane crashes. He doesn't write about the mysterious shooting of the Pope. He doesn't write about the mysterious links of John Hinckley Jr. or his family to World Vision and the CIA and AID in Nigeria and Guatemala, or George Bush or John Connolly. He doesn't talk about the mysterious shooting of Ronald Reagan and how this John Hinckley Jr. was there at that time and place, and all the mysteries of the surgery and the bullets and discrepancies. He takes two people that were blown up, and as I mentioned before, the Torrijos plane has more to do with drug dealing and wheeling and dealing and the drug arrest, the $2 million in Panamanian banks that were picked up of the men arrested in Miami, the international narcotics traffic, links to the Shaw, the Panamanian banks for Jonestown. It was Torrijos' time to go, and Jack Anderson runs with it with a suggestion that Fidel Castro was behind the killing of these two men, that he's the one to gain. He has more to lose by getting rid of two allies, two softies in Central and South America. If he had shot Pinochet, that would be something different, or the president of Uruguay or Paraguay, if he interfered with those elections. But he doesn't touch those people. And Jack Anderson is really come out with a bunch of articles that are just terrible. One of the subjects that interests me every week, and I haven't had time to update it lately, is the story of the missing millions. Where does the money go? Who's after it? Where does it fall? And there was an article this week on the Andrea Doria. That was the Italian ship that sunk. It was a luxury liner, and it sunk, and there's the fortune in cash and valuables. Now, the divers have an expertise. There are several safes in this ship that went down, and they have what you call a vacuum cleaner, and they went into the safe. The safe had money from the Bank of Rome, and the divers found the bank, and they had what you call a vacuum cleaner to go into the bank office. This is an underseas vacuum cleaner. They said, we have no idea if there's a fortune or not, but it will be the frosting on our cake. So there's an underseas vacuum cleaner to take out money from the Bank of Rome, and I wonder if it's linked to the Lissio Gelli scandal and what happened when the vacuum cleaner opened the sunken Andrea Doria and took the files out. That really is a feat, you must admit. That it reminds me of other missing ships that were sunk, and there was money on them. There's the book In Pursuit of the Awa Maru that I've talked about before, and I want to do more later, a Bantam paperback, $5 billion or more that was sunk in a ship during the war, disguised as a Red Cross ship, knowing that it had billions of dollars of treasury. It was anywhere from $5 billion to $3.8 billion. This is billion or $14 million. There's a discrepancy on the value, but it was part of the Tsar's fortune also in another ship in 1905 that is being brought up. There was a ship called the Edinburgh that was purposely blown up outside of London. It was described in the London Times. Two-thirds of the money of the recovery of this goes to Russia, gold and diamonds. This was sunk in 1942. The Lusitania is a story of a ship sunk on purpose and an excuse to get us into war. And I'm wondering how many people knew about this money. There's $50 million on the Edinburgh that was sunk in 1942. And as I say, one-third goes to Great Britain and two-thirds to Russia. There was another ship, the Empire Manor, described in the London Times, November the 9th, 1980. And this, they knew it was loaded with 1 ton of gold bullion and $50 million approximately. In 1973, they brought that up, and it was all delivered to the Bank of England. There's buried treasure inside Havana, not on a boat, uncalculated treasure that were put aside and buried somewhere for when Fidel Castro is overturned. And there is some more loot in Manila, supposedly 2.9 million collection of gold that the Japanese left there. But the sinking of these ships purposely, the Lusitania and the Awa Maru, it makes you wonder now about the Andrea Doria. How many of these ships with these tremendous fortunes are purposely sunk and brought up at a reasonable time, knowing that whatever is on there cannot be hurt by the salt water, and whoever gets it holds the spoils with this tremendous wealth at the inflated prices. There was an article this last week on the economy of the United States in comparison to other countries that I thought was interesting and gives us something to ponder about as we put more money into weapons and the landing forces and types of airplanes and tanks. The United States is sinking deeper into its economic problems. This article said the United States falls to the 8th spot in terms of being the wealthiest nation. It no longer is up high per capita income. It's down to 8. The interesting thing, Kuwait, not Saudi Arabia, was the first country listed at the top of general prosperity, and that is all oil money. Switzerland was the second country. They have no wars, only banks. Maybe we should go into banking instead of making the weapons. Sweden, always put down for their socialist medicine, free education, free housing, largest per capita income, no big amount of money in armies. Sweden was third. Denmark, a socialist country, no large armies or funding for weapons, was fourth. Two of our allies that we had to fight during the war, West Germany and then Netherlands, it was taken over by Adolf Hitler and then run by Prince Bernhard and Shell Oil. The West Germany and Netherlands are up there pretty high. And there was Belgium and Norway. The question is, in France, Are these socialist countries doing so badly, or Sweden and Denmark and France becoming a very wealthy country and still voting to be socialist? The Germans had a poll last week, and I think 49% of them said they preferred to be captive rather than have a war against the Soviet Union, that they would prefer to be red than dead, even though America says better dead than red, and if you don't make weapons, we'll make neutron and get rid of you. The important thing is that with all of the weapons that we're building and the deaths that we're incurring, we're not so well off economically, and it seems to me that the economists could figure some of this out, the powers that be, but they don't want to. I'll do more in the weeks to come on the death of A.L. Feldman, the chairman of the airline, this Continental airline that was in controversy with the Texas International Airline. That has to do with suspected narcotics traffic and controversy of infight of these airplane companies. I have a friend in Houston, Texas, who has sent me almost every article in the Houston Post of the infighting between these two airline companies. So it was very interesting in lieu of the material she sent me and the drug problems that the airlines had, Texas International and so forth, that the president of this airline was dead, the Continental Airlines, just at the time. They said he was found dead because he was desperately fighting the takeover of Continental by Texas International, but he could have been killed so the takeover would be easier, and the takeover might not take place if he were alive. I don't know that he commits suicide because he was losing, or if he was murdered so that they would, one company would take over. There has been a lot of mean fighting between the two companies, and I have many articles on. As I say, I'll go into them soon. Jack Anderson had another article, No Place to Hide, that 80 million to 150 million Americans would be killed in a nuclear exchange with the Soviet Union. And he goes on about the statistics of scare, but he protects the Murder Incorporated that Lyndon Johnson talked about. And the Murder Incorporated are the people that run this country, and yet he still protects them. He complains about the statistics, but he protects the murderers. Another article out of the World Bank, the rich to get richer and the poor to get poorer. I mean, that wasn't written in the Middle Ages. That was written now. Coming out of the World Bank, it's absolutely obscene. Another one, Regan dumps his tentative Irish envoy, William McCann. He had to dump him because McCann's been tied to a convicted embezzler, Louis Ostrer, and his foundation life is under criminal investigation. Ronald Reagan has William French Smith. That was another article this week about the mouthing but not the substance of going after crime. He's going after crime, but 94% of all crime comes from narcotics traffic. And he has appointments. The Teamster president is under indictment. He entertains in the White House. He has an envoy to Russia who's linked to organized crime and to crime problems. He has a CIA director who's linked to Robert Fesco and the largest syndicate mob in the world, the World Organization of Mobsters. And he has Frank Sinatra singing at his ball, an inaugural ball, and he's supposed to go after crime without going after narcotics. That's a contradiction. Another article this week, plot to kill Fratriano told. Fratriano is a member of the organized crime group who brags about killing 20 people. And he wrote a book. He's been helping the law enforcement people in order to stay away from his convictions that he probably would get on any one of them. He's been working with the Justice Department. Now, Fratriano is really mad at Frank Sinatra. He wanted a movie made out of his book, and he claims that Frank Sinatra stopped it. So he's writing a book, probably in hiding, about Frank Sinatra and organized crime. These are Fratriano's allegations. And no wonder there's a plot to kill him, because he holds a lot of information. And I mention every week on this program that if Michael Sindona, who's in jail in New York, or Frank Chirpel, or Michael Hand, and there's a whole list of 20 or 30 people, if they would come forward and begin to talk, and they are fighting each other, we'd get a few more solutions to some of the problems that are plaguing this country. I don't think the solutions are going to come from the left. I don't think they're going to come from the youth. I don't think they're going to come from the people that are, in quotes, concerned, because I get mail every week from 35 organizations that are, in quotes, concerned. the Rosenberg children, overturn the Alger Hiss case, stop nuclear testing, stop the neutron bomb, stop Diablo Canyon, raise money to prosecute the Nazis in North Carolina. There are literally 35 causes a week, and no two of them can agree that what the important problem is. The problem comes from a lot of the shenanigans that I'm talking here about, and it will only come from the inside, such as Watergate came when somebody like James McCord, who worked with the CIA 20 years, that when those people from the inside begin to talk, the system will come undone. There was a hearing on the Howard Hughes case in Houston this week, and a law article in the Los Angeles Times, a new Howard Hughes will turns up. Well, this is a funny story. It's not funny, but it's about a woman, Martha Graves, who went to the box of a friend of hers who passed away. And when she went to his safe deposit box because he was dead, she accidentally found the will that belonged to her late boss, Los Angeles attorney Earl Hightower. She used to work for Hightower, and she claims that he knew Howard. And when Hightower died, she went into this strong box and found the will of Howard Hughes. But it's interesting, she's part of an organization that she's president of that would be the recipient of this money. So, of course, the will is under question. But she described her company and mysterious foreign backers that were behind the company she's working for now. The directors of the company, she said, it's called Acme International Corporation, include herself and another former Hightower secretary, a woman or person that worked for Mr. Hightower, who had the Hughes will, named Phyllis B. Little, and another man, Franklin F. Ellis of Mac, Minneville, Oregon, who Ms. Graves described as a Baptist minister who formerly served as an investment counselor to the Vatican in Rome. Now, Howard Hughes and the Irish mafia or the CIA gang that I have claimed to have been fighting the Italian mafia for control of the world's narcotics trade, and this gets a little complicated, have broken the back of the Vatican or tried to by using Michael Sindona and the crime syndicate to siphon money off from the Vatican Church to weaken it. And I believe that there is a strong anti-Catholic movement in this country. It's headquartered in Dallas and the Fort Worth area and in Chicago and spreads out with these various TV ministers. There's a book out now about these TV ministers, these multimillionaire ministers, and they are Baptists, and there are very many people with strong anti-Catholic feeling that were behind the killing of John Kennedy assassination. There was a large group, H.L. Hunt, and that entourage in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So it's just interesting that she links the Howard Hughes organization and Howard Hughes with a Baptist minister who served as an investment counselor to the Vatican in Rome. So if the will story is wrong, if the names, it'd be interesting to check this out and see. I've never seen an article quite like this where the Baptist minister was the investment counselor to the Vatican in Rome, and then the Rome investments began to come unglued, which they are doing because of a large part of the Baptist ministers who are, in fact, in cahoots together. It was an interesting article that came out just on apropos of finding a will in this deceased man's box, but bringing in the Baptist who served as a counselor in Vatican in Rome. There's another article this week in Atlantic City. The states are urging a united policy for nuclear waste disposal. Now, isn't that funny? In 1981, July 81, that there's appeal to Congress for a high-level meeting to decide what to do with radioactive waste. Can you believe that? They've been making radioactive waste before the war was over, World War II was over, and using all kinds of weapons and stockpiling weapons and want nuclear energy and nuclear plants, and we know they had nowhere to dispose of it. The condition before they started making the stuff should have been to find out what they were going to do with the waste before they started, but now they've had a meeting and decided they ought to know what to do with the waste. The most obscene photograph I ever had of Ronald Reagan, it was Wednesday, August the 5th, 1981, in the Washington Post, page A2. AID gives back $28 million in funds, and it shows Ronald Reagan holding a check for $28 million that the Agency for International Development gave back to Ronald Reagan. Now, they legally were allowed to use this for poor countries. Part of this went to impoverished people. It went for legal assistance to the poor. It went for people such in Haiti. This article says Haiti will lose a project designed to help introduce improved technology, a project to increase production of a better grade of coffee, assistance to the Haitian Bar Association to help provide legal assistance to indigents, those poor refugees that will be sent back there from Puerto Rico to Haiti to be killed or tortured. And Ronald Reagan is laughing because instead of giving this money to the poor that need it, and it was allocated for them, for people in Bangladesh or Upper Volta or Guyana or Costa Rica or El Salvador, AID money that would help the people with legal aid and so forth, he has a check which he's holding up a poster which is about 4 feet long that the American people just made $28 million in funds. There's another article, huge Bechtel mining project. Those of you that don't get the San Francisco Chronicle, look that up. It's a very important article. This is July the 12th, 1981. And this is a, no, pardon me, this is August the 12th, 1981. Gold and copper. Now, Bechtel Corporation is an organization in San Francisco which is as large probably as the CIA that builds overseas in Saudi Arabia and other countries. It's a multinational building operation. It does everything from the BART trains in San Francisco to Saudi Arabian factories and so forth. Bechtel is an international organization equivalent to the CIA, and Caspar Weinberger, the Secretary of Defense, came out of that huge Bechtel project. Their headquarters are in San Francisco. But this article is from the Chronicle, August the 12th, tells about an investment they're going to make in New Guinea of gold and copper and mining and metals division. And it's very important because the satellites can look down and tell where the gold and mineral and silver is located in the world and around the world. And the huge corporations are able to borrow billions of dollars. There was another article, 1 billion line of credit, a mark of corporate clout. And huge corporations such as Texaco and DuPont and City Services and Seagram and Conoco and Allied Corporations, they can borrow $1 billion and they've borrowed up to $46 billion. No private investors can ever stake out. So Bechtel has taken an area where they'll get gold and copper and so forth, and there's a picture in the Chronicle of the map. Now, they've divided this corporation among four people, Amoco, AMOCO Minerals, which is Standard Oil of Indiana, Broken Hill Proprietary, an Australian firm. Part one-third goes to New Guinea, and the other part is a German consortium led by a particular company in Germany where they discovered gold down near Australia in Guinea, New Guinea in mid-1960s, and a global consortium can just come in and take the gold and the copper. Just as I said in the lines of Patachevsky and Network last week, there are no nations, there's just corporations. Now, one of the people involved in this, one-fourth of the operation, is Standard Oil of Indiana. And April the 1st, 1981, there was a United Press story that Neil Bush, the son of the Vice President of the United States, is the attorney for Standard Oil of Indiana. And I mentioned the relationship of Scott Hinckley, Vice President's Scott Hinckley is the brother of the man who shot in Washington at the President of the United States and three other people. Scott Hinckley was with Neil Bush of Standard Oil, and the Vanderbilt Energy have, according to the Wall Street Journal, April the 4th, have European investors, and also another article in the Salt Lake paper on Standard Oil of Indiana and Dorothy Hunt's plane crash at the time of Watergate. Now, it'd be very interesting to know, in lieu of the Bechtel mining project and the control and the influence of the Bechtel investments, if any overseas money that is described as European investors comes from those German consortiums, if the Hinckley family is involved in any way with Bechtel in this new venture. See, there's a tangled web of overseas investments, and we don't know where the money is going into Vanderbilt Energy, which is the John Hinckley Sr., outfit in Denver, Colorado, with their home base. The money is coming in for overseas. The overseas money is going to Bechtel. They can take a whole area like New Guinea and pull out all the copper and all the gold and have German, American, and unnamed investors making huge profits. And besides Caspar Weinberger, many executives and officials in the Reagan cabinet and decision makers come from the Bechtel organization. So they cover these resources. They get unlimited loans to look further into the wealth of the world and grab up the copper and magnesium or whatever you need and put it in the hands of a very few corporations so that 2% of the interlocking corporations control almost all the minerals of the world. Maybe it's a little more than 2%, but the way they're merging and coming together, it's very important to look into exactly what the relationship is, particularly to some family like the Hinckley family, to Vice President Bush's family and Vanderbilt Energy, and the attempt to shoot Ronald Reagan and put George Bush in as president. Are there any interlocking financial interests? Because the Bechtel are working with Standard Oil of Indiana, which is Bush's son, is an executive for that corporation. I'm trying to point out that these the vice president's family works for corporations that work with Bechtel, and that behind the grab for the world's resources and the world's narcotics, there's a combine that killed presidents in airplanes or shoot them in front of the Hilton Hotel or wherever they want and hold the monopoly in the hands of a few people. No matter how many bullets have to fly, they hold the monopoly in the hands of these few people. The article last week, August the 10th, was the crowded morgue forced to rent a truck in Miami, overloaded with bodies, rising crime, surge in the refugee population. There are too many corpses. They store them in rented refrigerated trucks, and they have them, 35 corpses, will cost $800 a month to hold in there till they know what to do with them. Pretty disgusting, and I have about 40 more stories I brought in, but there's no time to do them. They're called the sickies of the week. I think I gave you enough, and enough to think about for that listener in Santa Cruz who is fearful that there can't be this many interlocking conspiracies. Whatever names I threw out this evening all have a linear connection to each other. The same banking firms, the same relationships, the same clubs, the same business deals. And there is indeed, in fact, a group of people who have conspired, I believe, conspired against us, the people of the United States, in a way that never was intended, that will bring us back to a few feudal families who controlled the means for these portable jails, the portable morgues, the ice trucks, and so forth. And if you think you can stand up to them, when they get really mean, it's hard. Now, they've asked to write letters to Governor Brown about Sirhan. Do me a favor, write a letter. If you're afraid to sign your name, just write your letter, put in a mailbox anonymously and say, we're not in favor of Sirhan being in there the rest of his life until we know that this case has been opened again with the physical evidence of the bullets and until we are convinced that Sirhan shot Robert Kennedy. And as I said before, if you don't want to solve that one, then you've got more to go because Ronald Reagan and the whole California empire was behind that one. John Kennedy was murdered in Dallas and Martin Luther King in Memphis, but the California problem is the national problem, and that's where to look for the most trouble. In the meantime, save your grisly stories and consume them during the summer, and we'll keep going with the worst of the week, and I'll be back with you next week. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.